Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 276, my talk with poet and musician Andy N. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts, including this one. Yeah, that's right. You can listen to Yes But Why through the Audible app if you like. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your account today. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband Chris and I run to help podcasters. Mention code YBY20 and you'll get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy with us. We can help. PodcastCadet.com. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by True Hemp Science. True Hemp Science is my resource for vegan-friendly whole plant extract CBD oil. Check out TrueHempScience.com to see all the CBD products available to you. Use code YESBUTWHY7 to get 7% off your order of $50 or more. You get all the therapeutic goodness of CBD, plus a free packet of 2 CBD edibles with your order. I just had some of their cookies. Delish. TrueHempScience.com. This week on Yes But Why, I had the opportunity to speak with Andy N., a poet, musician, and podcaster from Manchester, England. Andy N. is the author of 6 full-length poetry collections. He composes ambient electronic music as Ocean in a Bottle, and he produces 4 different podcasts. Whoa. Listen in as we chat about building a vibrant creative community and connecting with artists all over the world. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 276. Poet, musician Andy N. is overflowing with creativity. Enjoy.
I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah.
Started writing when I was about 6 or 7, but my first surviving poem was when I was 10. I've got a terrible poem when I was 10. So I've managed to save everything I've wrote since I was about 10.
Whoa! That's amazing. Your biographer thanks you.
Oh, he does. He does. He's my partner, actually. But what I do is I answer like it's Amy. I've got them all in that little hardback A5 books. Every bit of my writing, I concluded some degree I was happy with. And I've got about 55 of them now. So that's took 40-odd years to do 55 of them. So it's like, wow. And some of the pieces in the early ones are just like so much hysterical teenage rage. I cringe at them now, generally.
You know what, though? I find that stuff is really helpful to look at when you're sort of reflecting on, you know, middle age rage, and you can be like, oh, I'm not mad about this thing that I was mad about 20 years ago. So maybe it'll ease up a little bit off of me now what I'm worried about, because, you know, I know that the passage of time is such that it's like, I won't even be worried about this. I usually honestly only think like a year ahead. Like if I'm really mad, I'm like, okay, am I going to be mad about this in a year? I'm like, no. So it's like, okay.
Best way. I do have one funny story, mind you, from that day. It's the second poem I ever wrote. Was we ended up going on a school trip when I was 11 to a local zoo, and I'm not going to name which one for various reasons. But when I came back the day after school, we got asked to write a poem about the trip to the zoo. And I didn't like the teacher who was teaching me very much. So I wrote a poem called The Kill, and it was about a lion breaking out of the cage and eating the school teacher. I got two weeks detention over that. Oh, no, why?
Oh my goodness, you got in trouble? Oh my God. Oh, that's so funny. Oh, what did your hysterical. What did your parents say?
They weren't happy. That's putting it nicely. The only time I ever got detention at school was over that. I was at school, I was pretty well behaved, like a boy to show us. In teenage years, I was fairly well behaved, so, but this is unfortunate. The creativity got me in trouble.
Yeah. Man, it is so funny, this idea that you're, you know, the power of your words got you in trouble. Like this artistic expression of what was going on in your head was what got you in trouble. That is so wild.
Hey, so I find that hilarious, don't you? That's why in hindsight, what I said is, yeah, the only time I really got in trouble was at school, don't you? So childhood was fine, don't you? So, but creativity, after I left school, I didn't quite really, it went dormant for some years.
Sure.
And I got to about 25 and I started writing again properly. And then I went to university at 28 to study creative writing. After I left university at 31, I joined a writing group a year or two later, and then it's carried on from there, really.
Huh. Man, it's great that you were able to go to school for creative writing. Were you like, was it something where like you were like, nah, I don't need to go to school, and then the program seemed interesting? Like, was it like you were like, no, it's okay, I don't need to do this, but then, you know, the school turned out, you know, was calling your name, like, oh, this is interesting, I want to get involved.
In my case, was I got to a stage in my 20s. My life as a career wasn't going anywhere. I was in a job I didn't enjoy, and I was stuck in it, and no way out, really. And I thought to myself, I need to improve myself. Because it's a good point here, this one, Amy, is when I left school when I was 16, I had next to no qualifications. I didn't wag school or anything like that. I just gave up at the wrong time. And I got to 22 when I went back and re-educated myself almost completely. Actually through going to lots of his evening classes, which are like, you know, like qualifications you learn in the evening after work.
Yeah.
Then I did that for about 6 years and went to university on that, I did. And I knew at that stage I wanted to go to university.
Yeah.
After teaching learning for 6 years. And that's where it all started, really, for me, creativity.
You know, what's interesting is that I feel like there's just such a life journey that goes on after you turn 18. You have to like reinvent yourself and figure out like that time when between, you know, 16 to 22, when you're like, well, I guess I can make my own decisions now. And then it's like, turns out that's not as easy as we thought. And the world is way harder than they told me. What's going on here? Trying to find your place. You know, why not take a moment, take that time to, you know, try things, figure it out. Plus, like, I feel like, you know, if every college student was in their late 20s, early 30s, it'd probably be a much cooler place, because like people would actually be learning and caring about learning. I mean, I definitely went to college 18 to 21 and these were not my, you know, prime excellent learning years. You know what I mean? Like I was there to have fun and I learned as a side action, you know, but man, that's really great that you were able to, you know, turn it around for yourself and that you like did the work to get to the place to go to the creative writing school. Tell me about how that experience was. Was the school really great?
Never was good school. And what I learned some of from my major was, and something came up. Now, have you heard of the term dyspraxia?
Yes, but I don't know that I know what it means.
I'll explain to you very briefly, and so I did do a bit of backtracking in this one. Is my case wasn't throughout my childhood, I struggled. I had the ideas for writing, but I couldn't really get this structure down. I struggled a lot with spelling and structure, and I was notoriously clumsy because of my eyesight.
Right.
It turns out I had something called dyspraxia, and dyspraxia actually is a more extreme version of dyslexia. I had like word dyslexia, where I was struggling stringing sentences together, and I bought Cosme physical coordination as well. It was dyspraxia, so it was a more extreme version. And that came up halfway through the second year at university when one of the teachers, who was very, very cute in the word, spotted it and referred me in. So then it was like, it made a lot of sense to me at the time, because then I learned through that, I had to get in like a support worker to help me get through uni and give me specialised equipment, which I use a lot. I say simple stuff in the day job nowadays. And it's how you adapt to it. And I learned I wanted to be a writer and I wasn't going to let that stop me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, forget wanting to be a writer. You have been a writer since you were 7 years old. They were like, hey, would you like a pen? And you're like, I've already bought the notebooks. Like, you are into it. I'm so glad that teacher was able to help you find a way to, like, make it better for yourself. Because, like, I mean, creativity and doing art is an uphill battle for everybody. But, man, if you want to be a writer and you have issues with letters and writing, man... I'm so glad that teacher was so observant and caring that, you know, they were able to direct you to a place where you could find good resources to get it better. Like, yay for teachers that, like, care.
Yeah, I agree. There's not enough of them, definitely, with that one. So I'm not going to name the teacher. I believe she died, actually. But, yeah, she was a great teacher for that. She was. So, but it's like, through that, it's university, I think, and it's a bit of a tricky one, this one, when you're dealing with, like, poetry like I am. So I know some poets that haven't been formally educated and they're great writers. But sometimes I think you need to know the rules sometimes, some things, even if you're going to break the rules, if that makes sense.
Totally.
It gives you like a background sometimes, I think. If you're not going to go to university, make sure you're well read on anything you do. That way then you know what you're doing to a degree. So that's why. Yeah. I found it really interesting in some ways, because I probably learned more in some ways actually go into a writing group after I left uni a year or two later.
Yeah, how'd you find that group? Because, like, I love that you have a group and that you have a community of people that you can write with, but, like, for people who are writing at home but, like, would love to connect with other people, how do you even find a writer's group?
Yeah, well, this first group I've been in three, right? First one, and I can't name names for legality reasons, okay, of course. But the first one, and I'm not going to name the group either, it was a really badly run group, to put it bluntly, was a badly run group.
Right.
And when me and some other people left that group, we formed our own group, and what we wanted to do was just write, have a laugh and a chat while writing, but make sure we do some writing all the time as well. And I ran that group, well, I ended up running that group eventually for about nearly 10 years I did. And over lockdown last year, this will make you laugh, Amy, this, because the partner's a novelist as well, and a novelist, poet, podcaster, and she does all kinds of things like me. But Amanda asked me last year, oh, who's going to be you writing? I'm doing workshops. Should we do a work? Do you want to do a workshop? And what happened was, we had a word of a few friends of ours that... just writer friends we get on well with. And we did a Zoom writing workshop last March as a one-off. 16 months later, we're still doing it every fortnight.
Oh, my gosh. So you guys are just continuously getting together and working? That's so great.
Yeah. And it is. And what's good is, like, it's to do. And but ironically, people wondering now, the day we're recording this, as soon as we finish chatting, Amy, in a bit, I'm going to have the tea. Then I've got logged back into Zoom again. I'm doing a workshop tonight.
Yeah, you are. Are you, like, leading them now? Is it like
I've been leading this one, yeah. I set this group up again, and I have exercises ready for every 2 weeks normally. I've got Amanda does one of them because she's never really done much teaching before, but it gives her a bit of experience. And sometimes one of the other guys will chip with one of doing exercise and they'll let me know in advance. Because there's only about six or seven of us, and if I'm honest, a good workshop, that's all you need. You don't need 30, 40 people, because then it's hard to manage. If this is five or six of you can have a good laugh.
Yeah. Well, also, five or six is about the number of people in any group that are going to do something. So you've got 30, you've got the five that do stuff. So better in writing, where it's like you'd like to accomplish the task of writing, like... instead of that, you know, you have these people who are dedicated. That must have been really nice to have a group to continuously go back to during all of this shutdown, to have like people that you knew you'd always see every couple weeks.
Yeah, it's been great. Been great because I think when most of the people that came to it, so that's why I've got, it's, my life is a very roundabout way. And most of the people we knew already, there was one we didn't know, we just met her actually as well, but the first time in person. But what happened, most of the people came from the spoken word open mic night I co-run. So I've been co-running an open mic, spoken word open mic. I nearly said open mic then, big difference.
Yes, yes.
It's a spoken word open mic, yeah. I've been co-running one called Speakeasy now for about 4 years. And we co-run this with a friend of ours called Steve. And Steve originally took it over from somebody else. Then various reasons, he asked me to come on board. And then he asked Amanda to come on board a month or two later. So there's three of us that run it. So as soon as we went into lockdown last year in England, Speakeasy went on to Zoom, but we'll talk about that later. Huh. But the very informal workshop we do came from that, where we had a word with a few people that we really get on with. And now they're seeing us twice a month on Zoom and once a month in person. So they're sick of the sight of us.
Oh, good. Are you able to go back in person?
Just started last week.
Oh, great, great.
That's why it's just started. It's a funny one because the state of play in England at the moment is we're still in lockdown until the 19th of July.
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to find out more whether it gets fully lifted, but they're talking about lifting everything on the 19th of July at the moment. So it's a case of wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you never know. And, you know, the powers that be make a decision and then we all sort of vaguely adjust. Yeah, it's been a weird time for sure. But then I'm so glad that you're able to connect with your, you know, social group that does the spoken word open mic together. So it's like the people that you were seeing and that were presenting every week, you know, now you guys get to do the workshops. Now, you seem very organized as a teacher. How much experience have you had leading writing groups and coming up with exercises? Because like, good on you for being prepared with exercises for these workshops, as opposed to just being like, hey guys, what are you working on? Let's talk about it. I can help you. You know what I mean? Like you give them something to do. That's great.
About 11 years now. So I haven't done it for a couple of years, but I've got about 11 years experience running it because the first workshop I went to after I left uni, that ran for about 5-6 years and it was chaotically organized. me and some of the people broke off in 2007 and we did that for about 10 years. And then one of the people I ran it with, three people, sadly passed away. And then me and the other one that we gave up then basically. So I went back to it a couple, like I said, this year. But it was a case of sometimes when you rode a bicycle, you never forget things sometimes. And I knew so all I need to do is sit down and think, usually about an hour before normally to sit down and decide 4 or 5 exercises. I want the group to tackle them. And when you know the group, it's like, you know what you can get away with sometimes, if you know what I mean, or you know what how we're going to react. It's just like with people reading, really.
Yeah. Well, especially since you've been with this group for so long, you have a connection with them. You know how they are as artists and what their output is like. Yeah.
Makes life a lot easier. It does. That's why. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I do a lot of improv, and my main effort as a teacher is to get the group to be connected in that way so that they begin to feel comfortable. Because as soon as you feel comfortable with other people, your creative output is better. You're able to, and you feel more free to create things that you wouldn't normally do if you have people that you trust around you. So it's great that you have, not only that you have right now, this like solid group of people that you've been working with during the pandemic, but like it's great that like there's this whole writer scene in your area that like allows you to have these writers groups and like help each other in great things. So are you like, is everybody in your writers group, you know, writing different kinds of things? Some people are writing poetry. Some people are writing novels. Like, how does it generally work? Or are they all performers doing spoken word pieces?
It's a bit of everything. That makes sense. Does the way the best way to look at it, Amy, is really is, in my case, is I'm really a poet and I do ambient music and other bits and pieces. Amanda, the partner's a novelist as well as doing a poet. And so it's like some of the exercises, she'll go along and start doing writing the first part of what, which has happened before now, but she's done the first part of what's turned into a book. And some of the people will do poetry, some a bit of prose, flash fiction. There's no actual set. I don't tend to like really saying, spend 15 minutes writing this as a poem, because yeah. I know it doesn't always suit people if you force them down that way sometimes.
Yeah.
That's why I want to try and keep it as fresh as I can to make we all have a laugh, really have a good time. And that's what it does. If you give them the freedom, I think people will write better.
Yeah. So are the people writing things and then presenting them in the workshop, or is it like they write them and then present them at the open mic?
It ends up being a bit of both. Because what happens in the workshop is that I always tell people, and it's optional, because only a few of us, if you like what you've wrote, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, don't want to share it, no problems.
Yeah.
So usually people end up sharing it. Whether they then do anything with it is another ball game.
Oh, well, it sounds like you provide a nice, safe space for them. So
that's what I want to do, because I like to be creative. I like it to be supportive. And I'm always believing workshops.
Yeah. You
know, it's a case of experimenting, trying something different out. Because I came out of the piece of it very recently. It's gone down a storm in the open mic circuit in Manchester, where about a swearing unicorn. And it's just because it came out, it dropped a number of F-bombs and other various inappropriate words. And it had the group cracking up laughing. And then I knew straight away it would work well reading them out, performing them, so.
All right, great. Yeah, I like it. I like how you and your group are creating wild unicorn pieces. This sounds wonderful.
That's just me. Amanda's done, she's done one about, she started off, she wrote a book about spoof clickbait pieces.
Hmm.
And if I can find it online, you can that. And she, her first piece she wrote for that book actually ended up getting performed on the BBC radio.
Wow, awesome. That's fun.
And she couldn't believe the big radio station in England, one of them, and they absolutely loved it. So yeah, you don't know what you're going to get sometimes. It's always good fun.
Man, that's so great and nice that you know, you guys are connected enough that somebody could, you know, hear or see her piece and be like, hey, let's put it on the BBC. Let's do it. Like, that's really great to get it up on, you know, television or radio. Like, awesome. Yeah, yeah. Good for y'all.
That's what it was for Amanda. It meant a lot to her. So yeah. But I found myself it as a writer, because I said before, I've been writing for years now, and I've done books as well. Okay. It's doing this sort of workshop. It's an ideas generator, because I started a book off on haikus last year, which became about the last book but one, which was started off in the workshop, because it came off an exercise Amanda set, and I thought to myself, I'll try as a haiku. Couple of haikus, and over 6 months I wrote about 50 odd haikus set in an underground train station in lockdown. So it was just like, the ideas are funny things at the best of times.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited about how you guys are inspiring each other in this group. That's so awesome. So you've clearly been involved in this creative stuff for a long time. You're like, you know, deep in the community of your area, all the writers, you know, doing the workshops and whatnot. How do you keep yourself going? I mean, we talked before we started recording that, you know, you have another job. So like, how do you keep the creativity flowing when you're probably tired when you get home from work?
And strange to me, because I first of all got rid of television about 10 years ago.
Okay.
I will occasionally watch, and Amanda's the same, she's not on TV in 20 years, but we will occasionally watch programs on Amazon Prime or Netflix, but we don't come home and put the television on.
Yeah.
Like, it's, we're both not working. It's a case of switching from one thing to another. And a lot of it is me just having a well-organized diary.
Yeah.
Like, it was, I will try and do one podcast a week on my spoken language. Make sure I try and spend an evening or two doing my music and a bit of time in writing and journalism, just keeping on top of everything using a well-organized diary.
Yeah. All right, good. I like this. This is good advice. Just keep it organized. One day per creative pursuit. That's really good. I like that you have like a day for music. So it how did you get into...
It doesn't always go that way.
Sure. I mean, you know, well intentioned. How did you get involved in music? You've clearly been a writer forever, right? But how did you start creating music during this journey?
Well, that was a while ago, to be honest with you, because long story short of it, and I met a guy some years ago through a friend of mine, actually, who lives in Bournemouth. And I went down to see this friend in Bournemouth, and I got talking to her boyfriend's best mate, and we found we had the identical taste in music. And he was a guitarist and a keyboardist, and I was a poet who can't sing. He's stating, I can't sing, right? But what happened was, we got talking to Keith, and I ended up saying, we're getting in touch over Facebook in 08 or 09. And we both got the stage where he was loving the work I was doing, and I'm loving his music in the band. We put a bit of music together over the internet, then eventually started once, twice a year, coming down, up and down the, either him to see me or me to see him, and we'd work on material.
Oh, awesome.
And so, it used to be like basically spoken word music over various degrees of music. And I'm not saying some of it is more tuneful than others.
Oh, man. So is all of your music then in collaboration with this friend, Keith?
Keith. Basically, he's got about four or five kids now. So we occasionally work on projects together, not as much nowadays. He hasn't got time. I went a couple of years down the line. He got married, and I went into a long-term relationship. And as I went into a long-term relationship, the time basically just wasn't what it was. And eventually I split this relationship. And then I decided I want to do music again. And I basically went into doing music by myself under the name of Ocean in the Bottle. And that was about 5.5 years ago.
Yeah. How do you make the music? Like you...
I've got a keyboard, like a USB keyboard.
Yeah.
And it gets plugged into my laptop. And I've got other bits of equipment that is too complicated to list.
Totally.
But I end up building sample banks of sound.
Yeah.
And by basic processing all that mathematics, I can often work out where things go.
Ooh.
I'm not a professional trained as a keyboardist or pianist by any stretch of thought, but it's a case of recognizing how to mix and how to build sound layer on layer and build sounds up on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty great. My husband would get along. He does a similar thing.
And the more, I don't know what your husband's like with music. My case was, another interest I had when I was growing up, I was massive into space and astronomy. And I got back into it about 5 years ago, and nearly all the music I do now for Ocean of Bock is space related. So it's like, I always tell people, if you envisage you're up in space, some of the music I do is like that in space.
I like it. That's super fun. Oh, cool. Space travel. My little kid loves space travel, so I'm into it. We'll start playing the music while we pretend to be astronauts around the house.
I think if you play some of my music, it'd probably scare your child.
I really need to send you a link to my husband's music. You really, I promise you, we've got some odd stuff and it's great.
We'll trade links afterwards then, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, ambient electronic, a little weird. Yeah, we got that. Don't worry. plus, like, you know, what's ambient electronic if it isn't a little unusual, right? It's the layering of sounds is so cool. I love that stuff, you know, so you know, it'll be great. I'm sure it's wonderful, and if it's cathartic creatively for you, then hey, it is wonderful.
It started off me though, and that started off because after I'd come out of my last relationship before Amanda, I was having sleep problems, massive sleep problems, and I used to do that sort of music, just trying to get back into it. So that's where it all came from, basically. So.
Just to put you to, like, you did the music as a way to relax yourself, or you made the music so you could listen to it and then fall asleep?
A bit of both. And it was like, I don't know, it's just a case of it. I think always believe it is as with the writing. When you get to certain stages, you keep doing over and over, improving. It's, you can find opportunities to open up to yourself. And I was like, I've got the stage now where I know about 4 record labels. And I've had bits and pieces coming out of all of them quite steadily throughout the year.
That's great. Absolutely. I mean, sometimes I say you've got to just continue. I'm sorry?
I don't look at the money on this.
I'm sorry, you keep cutting out. You keep glitching.
Right, try. I don't make a lot of money on Ocean of the Buckle, but I have great fun.
Who makes money on their art? Not me. Oh, man. Now, I mean, the thing about it is, the thing about creating stuff, sometimes it's the thing that, you know, puts money in your bank account, and sometimes it's the thing that fills your soul. So it's okay. I mean, there's no, there's something wonderful about both options. Like, to be able to do something that is just for you, or to be able to do something that soothes you. Like, I love the idea that you created this music to start, like, soothing yourself. Why not? Absolutely. Creativity is exactly for that. You know, I mean, I appreciate your caveat. Oh, I'm not making any money. Well, I mean, sure. Great. So I write thousands of things, and I don't think it's ever made me any money, but that doesn't mean I'm not, like, excited to continue to do it. Right.
So yeah, that's exactly what I'm like. It's the pleasure of doing stuff. Like, it's the problem with the poetry, anything I create it in. Yeah. It's the output of it sometimes, just the finishing of a project.
Yeah. Plus, like, you know, the beauty of being able to have a day job and then do it, like, a lot of people will be like, oh, I can't believe that a person has a day job and then they do art. And I'm like, why? Like, everybody lives their life whatever way they want to live their life, and don't judge it, because the beauty of you being able to do your art in a separate way is that you're not beholden to making money with it. You're not stressed out about paying rent while you're writing this thing, right? Like, you're able to enjoy it. You're able to let it be your outlet. And it's not something that, you know, there's a lot of talk about how people should take their hobbies and turn them into revenue streams. And that's not always the best plan, I think. I think sometimes there's beauty in being able to just do your art for you, for just creation's sake, right? I mean, this is not to say that the idea that Ocean in a Bottle being on some record labels isn't super amazing and great. Absolutely it is. If it turns out that our art makes us money, yay, I love it. But to not have to rely on it.
It's a bonus.
Yes.
It's a bonus.
Exactly. It's a bonus to the creative fulfillment I get for just doing it, right?
Yeah,
man, that's super awesome. And I love that you, like, you went down the musical rabbit hole. You know what I mean? Like, you like, as has been established, you are a writer. You are a writer forever. It is like in your soul. You are going to be writing no matter what. Nothing was going to stop you. And that's so great. It's like amazing that that's what you're doing. But the fact that you like connected with this other artist and were like, I'm going to open my mind up to a different kind of art that I don't usually do. Like, that's super cool. Like, and that's not like, you know, you weren't. The other thing that I think is interesting about it is like, you're not like 22 when you meet this guy, right? So the beauty of it is, and the thing that I think holds a lot of people back is they think, oh, at a certain point in my life, I'm no longer creative. Or at a certain point in my life, that's it. I just can't do anymore. What? No, you can make new discoveries. You can make new friends. You can make new collaborations every day of your life till you die. Like, don't let this idea that like, okay, well, I'm an adult now, I'm not going to do it. How is that? What are your thoughts on that? Like, is there anybody in your life that's like, hey man, why are you still doing this? Or is everyone super supportive?
My mom's never got to grips with it. Well, my dad understands it to a degree, but my mom's never got to grips with it. So, and it's like each stage of my life, honestly, Amy, where things have took on mood in a different direction. Yeah. I remember my mum saying that I became a poet in my mid-30s. You never make money off poetry. Then when the music came into it, when I got just turned 40, she said to me, you never make money on your music. Then when I became a journalist 3 years ago, she said to me, I don't believe you, you're looking at the journalist now as well. So it's like I think she's starting to understand now to a degree. It's like, It is what it is, because everything's, my life is just moving. It moves onwards all the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and like I said a moment ago, like, at least you're making money with your day job. Like, you don't have to worry about it. It's like, yeah, I might not make money with this writing, but don't worry about it. Like, don't let it be, you know, if you love going to that that spoken word open mic and being there with that community and being part of it, if you like meeting everybody on Zoom and doing the writing groups, why not have stuff in your life that you like? Why does it all have to be work?
Exactly, because I've told myself that years ago, where I believe there's more to life than just doing the day job.
Yeah.
I love the day job, no problem with doing it. I've done it for 10 years nearly now. I love doing it, love the job I do, but I want more from life than that.
Yeah.
And that's what job I do, thankfully, the day job is on flexi. So I'm used to done most days for 3 o'clock, half three.
Great.
It's not like a half five, 6 o'clock job, which I've done before and I hate it.
Sure.
But finishing the time I do, I've got time to do other projects. I've got more space. So it's super down to ground. It's just the way it goes, like I said, but I never planned, as some people were bearing in mind. When I started off in poetry, I thought I'd just be a poet. I never envisaged I'd end up doing music. I never envisaged I'd end up doing podcasting. I'm currently on to four or five different series. And then journalism on top of it is... Everything's just gone in a logistical direction of some kind.
Yeah. So how did you get involved in the podcasting? Was it like different friends had different ideas, or how did that stuff all get started?
This is a funny story. This one, you're going to regret having me on today because I'll keep you for a 3-hour episode. But Spoken Label, my big podcast, is it's very similar to this. It's an informal chat series. That started off at the end of 2015. First session began 2016 with one of my best mates, who's a novelist, science fiction novelist. And what happened was, we met up in the pub one night for a chat, and in the area where he lives in there, called Bolton. And I had the phone on me, and he said to me, why don't we do this? Why don't you do this as a podcast, and I'll be your first guest? So the first session with him went on for nearly 2 hours. And I'm not going to recommend you listen to it, because you just hear us getting drunker and drunker as the night goes on. But a couple of weeks later, I ended up, I met somebody else that I know, and I told them about this, and they said, oh, I'll be your second guest. And so that one was a bit more structured on. We met on the week after and did it in a coffee shop properly. And then two became three, three became four, and I've done a lot, to be blunt with myself. But I did a lot last year when I went into lockdown because of the day job. The day job sent me home on full pay, and I was just doing podcast after podcast. But I've done around about 300 sessions now in 5.5 years.
Awesome.
That's one. And then one became two when Amanda was doing a book review podcast by herself, didn't enjoy the experience, asked me, could we do a relaunch and I'd be a co-host. And we're up to episode 44 on that now, more than a monthly one. And I do a wrestling podcast with two gentlemen. And we've got a weekly one. We speak to a London DJ as well.
Awesome. I mean, how do you even juggle all that? That's so much.
Well, the wrestling one is about once every 2 months. So that's just easy. That yeah. When I meet up with two lads in question, one's a London-based DJ and one's an Irish radio broadcaster or some kind and a doctor. So it's like, so they end up with the three of us meet up on Zoom to talk about one wrestling program. And all it is just a pair of us quote one of the lads shooting the breeze for about 2 hours.
Yeah. Occasionally talking about wrestling.
Yeah, basically. So yeah. That's just such an unstructured, it's just like free geeks having a laugh, basically.
Yeah. There's a lot of those. There's a whole genre of podcasts that's just three dudes talking about something. So it's all right. Yeah. You know. Also, I was gonna say about your first spoken label episode, there are also a lot of podcasts that are just people talking and getting drunker and drunker as they do. So, yeah. Well, it's got its place.
Unfortunately, nowadays, man, I'm not really allowed to drink nowadays because
sure.
No, it's the reason being I haven't revealed yet is I'm actually diabetic nowadays.
Uh-huh.
So I became diabetic 9 years ago.
Yeah.
So the first one I got drunk in was the last time I did in the series drinking. I've not been drinking, but I don't drink nowadays.
Yeah.
So, which is probably a good thing.
Certainly helps you get all the things done that you're doing. Yeah. You have so many things. You're like, well, I could have this drink, but I have three podcasts to do tonight. So
yeah. That's what it comes like sometimes. I've got a backlog of editing I need to do.
Yeah.
And then bits and pieces. And it's case of I often have a list in my diary of what I need to get done on some weeks.
Mm.
And it's like, I know when I'm doing podcast editing, it can take hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
It can take hours.
Yeah. The after work, they don't tell you about that. They don't tell you about all that stuff. You know, you thought, oh, I could just record something and it'll be great. But then you're like, yes, here are the list of 47 things you have to do now that you're done to make it a show. Oh, yeah. Man. But I guess that's also like what, you know, I want to put a little effort in. I want to that's the extra effort of my art. You know, how can I package this and present it to the audience? That's one of the ways in which you can make your podcast stand out is like making the packaging that much more enticing to the audience. So.
Oh, yeah, completely. Completely. Yeah. Spoken label and doing me off a chat line at yours. I don't set questions. Don't believe in setting questions.
Yeah.
I will set the bar. I explain to people, we want to cover from point A to point B and what we talk about in between it. It's like we could shoot the breeze, basically. But I know certain things I've got to make sure we cover. So that's why. So it's just bullet points, why nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's why before we started recording, I was like, hey, if we go down a weird rabbit hole, it seems fine to me. Because in my mind, these are interviews for creative people about creative people. Like, how do you do it? How do you make it happen, right? I love that you are so, you know, strongly connected to your creative force that it just keeps creating new projects for you that you're like, oh, I have this great idea. Oh, I met this person and we're so inspired to do something else. And like, you still have that creative brewing going in your workshops. Like, that's so cool that you have all this inspiration around you all the time. Do you find that you got involved in, the first writer's group that you were in that wasn't really great, I feel like that experience, even though it was negative, probably led you to make a lot of decisions about, oh, well, I'm going to do it better. And so the way I want to do it is X, Y, Z. How has your, you know, process evolved? Like, how do you get the writing done? And is it different than you used to? Or you know, is it like, oh, I've always done this and all the time. This is how I get writing done.
Vary all the time. It's the way I look at it is, I think it's happened to a degree because I'm living with a fellow creative person. We're often pushing each other to go in different directions, try out new approaches all the time. A lot of it is experimentation. Everything you might create doesn't always come out for the best. Not all projects you do come out successful. Now, I've had it where some projects I've done have come out an absolute disaster. And we're working with other people. And a lot of it is everything that you do, either it comes works or doesn't work, you learn something from it. And I've always firm belief. I know some writers that stand still with the work. They do the same kind of stuff all the time. But I think if you stand still with your creativity, you end up around ever-decreasing circles. Mm. You've got to be constantly doing like point A to point B. Point C and point D. Now, I've got a quote for you, actually, if you bear with me 2 seconds on this. Mm-hmm, that I think sums this up.
Yeah.
Because one of my favourite singers is an American singer, actually, called Scott Walker. And he was in a band called the Walker Brothers. On the back of his fourth album, there's this quote. I'll find it for you. There you are. I think this sums it up, okay? It's quoted to the writer Albert Camus, okay? And the quote is, "A man's work is nothing but this slow trek to rediscover through the detours of art, those 2 or 3 and simple images in whose presence his heart first opened." And I think that sums it up really, because I think when you get a really good idea that you like, you will find a different way of approaching it and it'll lead you in the direction of the next one.
Yeah. Plus, I like the idea of that quote with reference to the idea that, like, even as kids, we had the kernels of the creative ideas in us, that, like, the stories that are coming out now were always there and are potentially, like, something that we saw at, like, age 2 that we didn't, like, cognitively understand, but now at, like, 43, I'm able to, like, say it. You know what I mean? Like, that's a beautiful idea, the journey of an artist in that way.
Yeah, I think so. So I'm 50 next year, and I can look back at some of my pieces I wrote in my early teens. I wouldn't necessarily write them that way nowadays, but you find there's links sometimes, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, to work that comes later.
Yeah.
And work that projects you do when you get older.
Yeah. No, I think that all the time. I just recently took I'm currently taking a short story class, and I'm writing in that short story class, just in the specific format of short story. But I have all these ideas of different things to write. And I was like, what works well with this? And I realized that the story that I'm writing is a story that I've had in my notebooks for maybe 8 years. I've been writing these characters and writing different points of view a bunch. Like, I have done this story from different directions 5 or 6 different times. And if I was the kind of person who was like, this isn't working, forget about it, I could have thrown it away. But I didn't. I believe that characters and storylines, they just keep coming up for you. So if they keep coming up for you, like, keep writing them, right? Because sometimes I think that you need to get to a place in your own understanding of the world before you can tell that story, right?
Like, yeah, definitely.
I am a much different writer than, like you mentioned, you as a child. I'm a much different writer now than I was in my 20s when I was a kid. Absolutely. You know, I've seen the world. I've seen different things. I've had different experiences now. This story needed to wait till I got to this point, till I had seen certain things. There are kernels from my childhood all the way through it, for sure. But now I'm like, oh, I'm able to see a new way to tell the story. And I think that it's really important to, like, you know, keep track of, clearly you're a guy that keeps records and I appreciate that. But like for people who are listening that maybe aren't, like if there's an idea that like really excites you, even if when you go to write it, it doesn't feel right, save it. Keep that stuff, put it aside in a folder or something, because in 10 years, maybe you might be like, wait a minute, I know exactly what that guy needs to do now. And you can find it and then just write that story. There's nobody saying, oh, you can't go back to those old ideas. Yes, you can. Use them. Let it inspire you. Like, what if you were to try to write the same story? Like, you give yourself a writing prompt every year on the same date. You know what I mean? Think of how different the stories would be, even with the same writing prompt. The development of your own understanding of the world, of how to create characters and stuff, has to change and ebb and flow, especially with all the people around you, your community, your partner, where it's like you've got so much creative flow around you. Oh, man.
I have done a book on, that's probably close to that, is when I talked about, I was just pulled a book out, another book of haikus out recently. Going this way, you might have this one interesting called Haiku of Life, where I've gone along and told a haiku every year in my life in one specific memory. Some of the memories on them, I think I've come back in other pieces. So it's like prior to that. So I think that covers your angle there. Mm. But wasn't conscious, that's for sure of it.
Yeah. Do you journal? Like, meaning like your personal stuff?
No, I'm not. I don't journal. Now, I've never quite got into journaling, to be honest with you.
No, me neither. I have a journal for really intense times. So it's like if there's no way that I feel like I just have so much going on and I can't deal with it, I have a journal, and it's usually for negative stuff. It's usually like, I can't handle this thing that's going on in my life. So I hide that journal. No one looks at that journal. But at the same time, like, I don't write in something every day, like, this is what's happening, stuff like that. I kind of wish that I did, purely because I don't personally have a great memory. You know what I mean? Like, so when I look at photos, you know, photos are great, but if I can't remember who's in the picture, then it's not helpful to me, right? Like, if I'm like, I remember that this is a summer camp I went to when I was 20, but I don't know who that guy is. Like, that, you know, that's a shame. But if I wrote something down, maybe I would. I don't know. I can beat myself up about not journaling. I suppose I don't need to.
Yeah. I think I used to bizarre me. When I was younger, I used to have a really bad memory. Mm. But I think the older I've got, the better I've got with it. Because I've had people telling me this before, and I'm the pilgrims, and they said to me, they don't know how I remember some of the stories sometimes. And it's probably down to the fact I'm used to telling stories now, where I could probably handle them better in my head, I reckon, sometimes.
Well, you know, they say that storytelling is the way that we understand the world, and that repeated storytelling, well, interestingly, I've heard that repeated storytelling of an event in your life, actually, every time you tell the story, it gets further and further away from what actually happened. Like, isn't that like the idea of that always blows my mind? Because I, like you, have a handful of stories that I tell over and over. There's like, oh, yeah, I can tell you about this one. Oh, I'll tell you about the time that this happened. Just basic, like, icebreaker stories, or like, oh, what, you need me to be in your show right now? Yeah, sure, I got something. But I definitely feel like every time I perform them, they're definitely a step away from what really happened. You know, because you make, with storytelling, you make things make sense, you make things connect, and sometimes in real life they don't.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think as well as if you look in the areas, the more often you tell a story sometimes. Mm. And there was an American writer, and I forget, Spalding Gray, you heard of him. Mm-hmm. And he's worth researching him, if you know, people haven't heard of him. He died a couple of years ago, but he was actually a stand-up storyteller. And he used to go along and he'd do full shows for audiences on tour and start off the tour, not got a clue what he was going to say. And as the story, the tour developed, the story he was telling every night would change. Like his own memories would look at things in different ways.
Yeah.
So by the end of it, like 20-day tour, he'd then go and write the book, and the book would have started off completely different from what he started off with the story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's also something to be said for the reaction of an audience, for sure. You know, it's like having editors in front of you immediately, you know. So when you do your spoken word open mic previous to, you know, the shutdown, for you, do you find that the audience helps you to edit the work that you present to them?
Yes, because definitely, because whenever you're doing live show like that, it's a case of looking at people, and you can see what parts of any piece you do go down well with people, and in some cases which pieces go down well with people as well. Because certainly when I've been doing performance stand-up poetry now for about 15 years now, and it's a case of back in the early days, I'd go along and read a piece and come off stage afterwards thinking, why didn't they understand it? Then I have to, well, sometimes I used to come back and look at it thinking, well, that ending probably confused them. That middle bit didn't work. It's, a lot of it is self-reevaluation. And it's the same goes for if you're ever doing submissions. If you ever get a submission back and you think the piece is perfect for a magazine, you're after, I'm always a believer, you go away and look at it and think, why was it turned down? Was it turned down because of the volume? What work, they've had thousands of entries, they just don't like the piece? Didn't understand it. A lot of it is, I think as a writer, you've got to be looking at, and it's a funny thing to say, so I would never done this when I was younger, is I don't think that a piece at a point probably can ever be quite finished sometimes. You could go along and probably do 200-300 drafts on it if you're not careful.
Yeah, I try myself not to get too precious with stuff that I write, especially when it is going to be performed by someone that's not me. So I've done a bunch of like sketch comedy. And so I'll write a sketch and then hand it to actors and then they do with it what they're going to do with it. Right. And the first couple of years that I did it, I got really like annoyed and mad when they like didn't memorize the exact lines or they like changed the joke. And it was like, no, it's not that, it's this. And then I was like, you got to let what happens happen. Like in the journey of a script that is to be performed, you know, you have to be open to the fact that it might change. Like, I love the story of Spalding Gray, you know, starting with a plan at the beginning of the tour and coming out with something totally different at the end. And that being like the journey he's looking for.
You raise a good point there, because you're looking at, say, comedy, for example. Comedy is such a subjective word. And you're looking at what one person may find hilarious, the other may not. But you're also looking at like how tastes and stuff change from country to country. Mm. And if you look at the sense of humour in America, it is completely different to what's in America, in England. Because people, it's where people research this themselves. Usually American humour is much more, I find, almost slapstick. Because like if you look at like a lot of these silent comedy, it's much more visual. But English comedy tends to be very structured very differently.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting to see what works with different audiences, different groups, different age groups, different parts of town. Because I've done a lot of live comedy here in Austin, and there are just different neighborhoods. You know, you do it at this club, this crowd's watching it. You do it at this club, this kind of crowd's watching it. And so whenever I develop a show, I'll say to them, who's the audience here? Like, who comes? You know, like this crowd, okay, they're all in their early 20s and they're mostly, politically liberal. Okay, great. We'll make sure that the jokes and the ideas fit that crowd, right? You're not going to make some joke that they're going to be like, what? Are you saying something about me? It's like, no, we wouldn't do that because we know who the audience is, right? And I love the idea that the way that comedy works in different places. I mean, there's so many factors to that. And I just love it. I think it's great. I love watching other countries' art and being like, okay, what, how did this come? And like research how it got started, you know, even like boy bands from other countries, right? What was it? My kid had recently happened upon like a Korean boy band. And I was all like, what's this? All right, let's get into it. And like, I went down a huge rabbit hole, like looking into them, like, oh, what is this? Oh, I see. This is how they were run. This is how this got created. Oh my goodness. I was like, oh, they dance so great. Oh, well, they're professional dancers. Oh, okay. You know, so it's like artists develop different projects, different inspirations, the beauty of the different cultures that inspire them. And I love that, you know, you and I are from different cultures, inspiring different kinds of art, right? But we're still out there doing it and making it happen and trying to be active in our own communities where we are, right? That being said, the other beautiful thing about, you know, the internet and stuff is that we can talk, like that you and I can connect and be friends and be like, hey, what's going on over there? Oh, really? This is the funniest thing? Oh, okay, maybe I can see if I can work that. You know, what things work in different places can inspire you to do something else. You're like, I never even knew that that was an option, right?
Yeah, that's the perks of using Zoom or something like that, because I can, it's let you talk to people, particularly over lockdown in both our countries. You've learned how to, you've met other people on it, and you've taught different artists different ways of life. And that's, that is, if ever you do this sort of thing, a good session for me is like a good workshop. You get something from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Human beings just connecting and being together to create something together. I love that. I love that. So,
true.
So final question for me to you, what is the thing right now that is creatively exciting you? Like, what project are you working on, or what's the like next thing? What's the thing brewing in your brain right now that is exciting you creatively?
Sure. Now, I've just bought a book out of haikus, and I've got a book of my journalism on the articles already set, so they're done. Currently, I'm working on a poetry book at the moment, and this is actually something completely not done before, where I'm doing, it's a load of imaginary letters between a couple. After it basically started off in an affair, and then it went something to relationship, and then unfortunately collapsed at the end of it. So this has took about 3.5 years to write so far. It's taking time because it's such a multi-layered piece. I've done about 60 pieces in it, and I've done 8 pages in it. It'll need another 70, I reckon. Another 3 or 4 years this one's done. So that's a big project writing wise. There's going to be other bits come out before I get this book done, because it's, I'm one of these sort of poets. As writers, I've got folders.
Yeah.
And I often like put things in folders and it builds up naturally.
Yeah.
That's why, but that's the big prod. That's the big one. I'll get that done for a day.
Yeah, absolutely. I really honor you as an artist that you have projects that you know are going to take multiple years. Like, there's something really beautiful about that. Like that you have the patience, the confidence in your own continued ability that you're like, yeah, I'm going to create this, and this might be a 5 or 6 year project, but every minute of it is worth the time that I'm putting into it. And that's
it, correct. That's what it's going to do. It's been like that for a while for me, because I don't want to take too long this now, looking at the time for you. But my second book was the crunchy for me, because I did the first poetry book in 2010. Mm-hmm. It took me 5 years to do the second book.
Yeah.
Because it's a case of, I wrote about 200 poems in it, and it's a case of I couldn't get the actual piece I wanted in it. Wrote 50, dumped 40 of them, wrote another 50. That became the book, and I kept 10 of them with the first lot. It just went on forever.
Yeah.
So that's why. But it goes that way with some projects. As an artist, some projects, you know, if you really want it, you have to work on it.
Yeah. Oh, Andy, it has been so great to have you on the podcast. You've been so inspiring to me as a writer, like just all these ideas and community. Oh, so, so cool. I'm so glad that this is the, you know, that you have this crowd with you that you're able to work on all sorts of different projects and that you have the support of your friends as you go through it. Like, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Been a pleasure. Really, really enjoyed it. So, everybody, listen to loads. Subscribe is my philosophy.
That's right. Subscribe to all of his podcasts. If you haven't subscribed to this one, do that one too.
Do all of them, right? Because when you do a job like mine, it's great because the day job is I could actually have iTunes on all day. So I will sit there and have to do 5 hours of listening to podcasts.
Wow, that's fun. That's great.
Yeah, but it's not good. It's not good. Your manager's waving at you, trying to get your attention for 2 hours.
Okay, so cut this part where you say you listen to podcasts all day, so your boss doesn't get mad. Got it. You no problem.
he won't care. Yes, I got to work them.
Oh God, you're so funny. Oh man, awesome, cool. Well, thank you for being part of it. It's been a great chat. I've had a nice chat with you.
George. Really enjoyed it, Amy. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.